Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast.
It seems like you know ball the way you talk, so.
Thank you. Someone clip that.
I'm not playing in your league unless I can draft myself.
Outside of football, I live a pretty boring life.
With Matt Harmon.
This is an anti-getting greedy podcast here.
Been seeing you guys' podcast kind of blowing up here recently, so glad to get on.
It's Thursday, January 19th, and the Betting Bros, thank God, are back to help us preview what should be, what will be, I'm going to go ahead and say what will be, another fantastic week of playoff football. Frank Schwab, we were just talking about this behind the scenes. You know, despite microphone issues last week, we brought you back because you know what? Hey, we run a progressive, modern, forward-thinking operation here. We don't just put guys on the bench just for one mistake, buddy. Hey, how you doing, Frank?
I'm doing well. Doing much better after the Dallas Cowboys lined my pocket. I'm sad to see the 2022 Buccaneers go. They were good to me. Fading them, obviously. By the way, guys, this question gets asked every year, it seems. Divisional round weekend, the best weekend of football of the year? Is it number one on our list? Is it still Super Bowl Sunday? Is it? For me, it's week one. I love week one. I'm a weirdo that way. You know, everything's new. Everything's fresh. Yeah. Is this the best weekend? Is this a divisional round weekend the best for you guys?
I think it is. I'll answer. Yeah, Scotty, I want to hear your thoughts because I saw you tweet about this, and I've usually felt the same way that I think that it's usually divisional round weekend is the best, but and I've been pretty, and I know Scott, you feel the same way. You're pretty anti like the extra seed of the playoffs, but wildcard weekend has been, maybe it's recency bias because this wildcard weekend was awesome, Scott, but I do feel like it's kind of delivered here the last couple of years at least.
If I ran everything, the Chargers would be back in San Diego. We'd have a 16 game schedule. We'd have the 12 team playoff format. I thought that was perfect. But I do think this is the best week of the season because we get the best weekend of the season. We get the games on Saturday. We get games on Sunday. There's still a lot of diversity to what the Super Bowl matchups could be. I was talking to Frank about this week. If we assume nothing against the Jaguars or the Giants, I don't think either team is going to the Super Bowl. You cannot come up with anything less than a great matchup with the other six teams. And that really excites me.
Yeah,
I might have gone along with Frank's idea that week one is the best week of the season. I think at one point I may have felt that way, but with teams pulling back in the preseason, I feel like week one leads to a lot of sloppy football. It's almost like an exhibition plus week. So it's still really fun, but any football is better than no football. But I think that's taken a little bit of the juice out of week one. So yes, I'm going to sign off on divisional week. It's not the greatest name. People said that before, but to me, look, I mean, next week will be great. Obviously, the Super Bowl is like the most American of holidays, right? It's everything we are. You know, even people who aren't football fans will be tuning into a Super Bowl for whatever it is. They're in a pool. They're going to watch commercials. So it's a very American event. But this is the pinnacle for me.
Yeah, it's beautiful. We got all the best teams here. Let's dive right into it. We're going to preview these games in order of when they will be played. Let's just jump right into the first one here. We got Jaguars at Chiefs. The Chiefs are 8.5-point favorites. We got a beefy 53-point over under. Let's talk about when the Jaguars have the ball here first, and then we'll get into our picks. We'll get into the spotlights for each guy here. But when the Jaguars have the ball, Frank, My big question here is, can they protect Trevor Lawrence? Chris Jones is kind of quietly, he feels like a guy that never gets talked about enough in, in sort of big media, mainstream media, but he's kind of quietly had like a defensive player of the year type season. The Chiefs, I believe, are top five in pressure rate right now. That seems to be a pretty key question here. Can they keep Trevor upright? Can they keep him, you know, centered and calm and everything? Because if they do, then I think there are exploitable matchups for the Jaguars in the secondary.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right about Chris Jones. I mean, other than Nick Bosa, who he was just a force of nature this year. Chris Jones might have been the best defensive player in football, at least in the conversation. Doesn't get that credit a lot. But we know what this Chiefs defense is. It's average. It's okay. Like, they don't need to be great because they got a great offense. It's a very average, exploitable defense at times. I think they're better than they have been the past couple of years. Not great. I don't know if this is the defense that really gets to Trevor Lawrence that disrupts him. I actually think Trevor's going to have a pretty good game. We'll get into Jaguars a little bit later. But I think, yes, a big key for this Jaguars team being balanced, not getting behind. Of course, no team wants to get behind. You don't get behind 27-0 this week. Let's put it that way. I think the Jaguars would be just fine because this Chiefs defense, it doesn't really scare anybody. It's not a defense that's, yeah. I mean, Chris Jones aside, who do you really fear? They got a couple good young players, but I think that the Jaguars offense is going to be just fine.
Scott, I think that when you look at the Chiefs give up the 10th most yards after the catch this year. You know, when the Jaguars have been able to get guys like Christian Kirk into the open field, especially Evan Ingram. I mean, Evan Ingram has been rolling, like when they can get him into open space over the last, month and a half of the season, and obviously last week a little bit as well. How does this Jaguars offense match up with the Chiefs defense? And Travis Etienne coming off a big game in the wild card round.
Yeah, I want to see. The Jaguars only 20th in offensive rushing DVOA. I always feel like there's a little bit of meat left on the bone with Etienne. I do not understand why they do not prioritize him as a pass catcher, but I don't think you want to go into Kansas City and ask Lawrence to win the game on his own and throw 45 passes. And certainly concerned about the Chiefs, more of an offensive thing with Andy Reid, but just that he's so good after a bye week. They've obviously been rested. They weren't exposed last week. I also am concerned that teams that have comeback wins like the Jaguars had last week, they're generally really, really obvious fades the next week, especially when you have a team that if you gave them truth serum, they'd probably say, yeah, hey, you know, this is the first step to hopefully a really nice, you know, 4 or 5 year window. We have our franchise quarterback. We made the playoffs. I don't think internally they really believe they're going to the Super Bowl or anything like that. So I'm concerned this game could maybe get out of hand early. A key for Jacksonville to me is it needs to be balanced on offense. And we need to have Travis Etienne. If they're going to win this game or compete in this game, I think Travis Etienne has to play well.
Yeah, I think that's fair. 2.9 yards after contact per attempt in the wild card round. I thought, obviously, they got him rolling on the big fourth down play. He's really fun when he's operating at his peak. They have a lot of fun players when they're operating at their peaks here in Jacksonville. But I'm kind of with you. Obviously, you mentioned Andy Reid's record coming off a bye week. It's 28-4. Record after buys. That's nuts, that's man. Insane. It's nuts he's been rolling for this long.
And not a fluke, right? Like, we know Andy's great. We know why. Like, it's not one of those, like, weird trend stats where you're like, this makes no sense, whatever, full moon on a Thursday, whatever. No, it's because Andy Reid's awesome. And, man, this Chiefs offense, I don't really know how they did it this year. I'll be honest. Like, I look at this Chiefs offense, and I'm like, they're, you know, number one across the board. How? They have obviously greatest, the baddest dude on the planet at quarterback. Kelsey's amazing still, although, you know, long time without a touchdown for him. And who else? Who's the Chiefs' third best offensive player right now? I mean, not counting linemen, I guess. Juju or McKinnon? I don't think any of us really believe in McKinnon. Like, it's impressive what they've done on offense. But they do it. They're just that good because Andy, because of Patrick Mahomes, and Kelsey.
Well, Scott, that's a good transition into your spotlight about McKinnon, because I think we've talked a lot about McKinnon on the podcast and how essential he's been to this offense.
Yeah, to piggyback what Frank was saying, I mean, if you had been in Tibet all year and you come back like, okay, Chiefs are number one seed, Mahomes is basically the MVP elect, who went along with them for the ride? Kelsey had a great year, but it wasn't like it doesn't look different than other Kelsey seasons. But who is the third amigo in this offense? It's not Juju. McKinnon's been unbelievable for fantasy. Again, if I told you McKinnon had one touchdown into December. If I said, okay, you know, don't worry, keep playing for fantasy. He's going to win your league for you because he scored nine times in the next six games, most of them through touchdown catches, which are the last thing you expect from a running back, right? But he's kind of turned into that, what they were using Hardman for a lot. It's just that easy button to press when they get in close. And last year, remember, McKinnon didn't have much of a regular season, but he was actually a really impactful player for them in the playoffs. And right now, I think it's fair to say he's their most important running back. Pacheco's been okay. They may get Edwards Zelaire back at some point in the playoffs. But I'm in some playoff contests where I'm going to be playing McKinnon with a fair level of confidence this week because they've shown you when teams don't tell you the truth. They do what they do on the field, and that's how they speak to you. And the way they've used McKinnon in the last 6 weeks and the way it's been so successful, and especially because they're scheming up plays that are Jerick McKinnon touchdowns, that's part of their offense now. I got to figure he gets in the box again this week, and I'm going to, fantasy-wise and prop-wise, I'm going to play that appropriately.
Yeah, McKinnon has been awesome. And the Jaguars sneakily do have the fourth best pressure rate on the season. You know, Josh Allen, good player up front. They've gotten moments out of Trayvon Walker. And I feel like the trusty aspect of McKinnon's game, like I love that not only did you mention, Scott, that he was hot to finish this season, like this last season, last postseason was really when the McKinnon stuff started, that he was going to be that sort of trusted passing down back, but then just took on more and more and more as the postseason rolled along. This certainly feels like a moment where we could see like McKinnon's highest snap rate of the season. Again, Pacheco has been good. Pacheco brings a lot of pop as a first and second down runner, but so does McKinnon. We pointed this out on the podcast all year long that McKinnon gets work on first and second down, both as a receiver and as a rusher. I could see this being a big game for him. Frank, what's your spotlight for this game?
Yeah, and real quick, just to add to that, we really were debating Patrick Mahomes' MVP when the third best player on his offense is Jerick McKinnon. Really? Like, yeah, that's what we're doing? Right. Like, what? Patrick Mahomes, that he should win unanimously, and he actually probably will. Yeah. I look at the Jaguars side of this, and look, I mean, Zay Jones, we know he's kind of almost in a funny way, boom or bust. Like, what are we getting out of Zay Jones? Is it one catch for 10 yards, or is he going for 100 and a touchdown? The Chiefs did really well against the slot this year. Didn't give up a ton to tight ends. Didn't give up a ton to running backs. But they did give up a lot to outside receivers. And that's why I think this is a boom play for Zay Jones. You know, somebody like the Jaguars are going to get their yard. They're going to get some points. And I think this is Zay Jones week. I think this is huge for him to have a big game because I think the Chiefs can kind of contain everybody else. So if the Jaguars are going to stay in this game, they're going to cover the spread. They're going to give us an upset possibility. I think it's because Zay Jones has one of those, hey, he had 114 yards and two touchdowns type of game. So we know he's capable of because he seems to do it every third week. So that to me is a huge key to this game. And I think he comes through. I think Zay has a really nice game here.
Another reason why you can play Jaguar props with confidence is how narrow, how concentrated this offense is, right? They do use one running back. They use primarily two receivers, and they use a tight end. Lawrence will run a little bit, and because he's so big and athletic, moves really well for a guy who's 6'6". Doesn't really look like that when he's running, but we know where the ball's going in Jacksonville, and that's in a year where so many offenses have been either too scattered or not productive enough. I mean, Jacksonville was one of the right fantasy answers this year. If you draft into any of their major players, right? I mean, James Robinson, I guess, wasn't really an early pick anyway, yeah. But Etienne hit, Lawrence hit, Kirk hit, Jones hit, and Engram, you had to wait for it, but he ended up being one of the best answers at tight end. Whether team, there were more right answers on the Jaguars for fantasy than there were with the Chiefs this year, which is just absurd to say out loud.
It really is.
Yeah, and it's all the discounts, man, for Jacksonville. That was great. And the Zay Jones thing is a good one because the Chiefs perimeter coverage has been a little questionable. And it makes me think of like a couple of those plays against the Cowboys in that upset for Jacksonville. Like Zay Jones put the double moves on the outside. Now, the Chiefs, while they might have perimeter coverage problems, they probably won't have like somebody as questionable as Kelvin Joseph out there like when the Dallas Cowboys did, Frank. But I do like that call a lot. Zay Jones on the double moves outside. That should be pretty crucial in this game. I'll spotlight somebody because we're talking about who's the third best player on the Chiefs offense. I am not a Kadarius Toney bro. There's a ton of Toney bros out there. But I do think he is an interesting player to think about in this game. He's gotten a target or a rush attempt on 21% of his snaps in the final 3 weeks of the regular season. Basically what that means is like, he's not out there a ton, But when he's out there, they're looking to get him the ball. And it's mostly been in like gadget ways. You know, he's running a lot of the Mickey Mouse routes. You know, he's not running the big boy, like downfield type of stuff. I wonder if we see more of that in this week. But even if we don't, you know, there's not any like props on him out there right now. I know he's $14 in Yahoo Daily Fantasy. But if you are looking for sort of like a guy who could pop in a big moment here, I don't think he ever will be. And I don't think he will be in this game, like a real legit outside receiver or anything like that. But as a gadget guy, you know, with Mecole Hardman apparently struggling through a pelvis injury or whatever's going on with Mecole Hardman, I think Kadarius Toney could be a guy who pops in this game.
I agree with that. I mean, I think when the trade happened, everybody had kind of the same reaction of, oh, this is really an interesting fit. Like, this could Kadarius Toney could milk a hamstring injury for the rest of the season too, or he could be a real factor in the playoffs. And I think, I mean, as we talk about with who are the Chiefs' options? Well, that's why you manufacture stuff for Toney. I really like that call.
Yeah, I think he's definitely a guy that could get those manufactured touches. Would love to see somebody emerge as like an outside receiver on this team. You know, you got Juju as like a primary big slot type of guy. You got Kelsey at tight end. You got a gadget guy in Toney. You got a like a gadget pass catching back. And just imagine when they get legit outside receiver, whoever that might be. You know, it's not Justin Watson. It's not MVS. But we shall see what happens in the future for the Chiefs. But let's stay on this game. Let's pick this one. Scott, you get us started. What's your pick for this one?
Yeah, you're with Andy Reid off a bye, with the Jaguars 26th in defensive DVOA, 30th in pass defense DVOA, and maybe just, you know, their season hit their ceiling last week with the comeback win over the Chargers. It feels like it ends here. If you don't feel confident a team is going to pull off the upset, it's hard to take the points. Frank and I were talking about this off screen backstage. I hate laying big points with favorites in the regular season. And part of it is because the season is so long and there's so much emotional ebb and flow that every once in a while, a big favorite just isn't up for a game for whatever reason, because it's just hard to be up for every game during that 17-week season. That never happens in the playoffs because everything is so critical and magnified. There's the urgency there. I think the Chiefs win this one in a rout. Again, I'm not a big regular season. I'm not big giving away big spreads. And I get that Kansas City has been a horrible bet against the spread for about 10 weeks now, but I think they win by double digits and I'm going to lay the points with Kansas City.
And last week we got two big favorites, right? We got San Francisco and we got, what was the line for Seattle by the end of it? They were +8.5, like pretty similar to this.
Somewhere in there. Yeah,
something around there. But we got two pretty big favorites, 49ers. They covered the spread. And then we got the damn Bills. They couldn't get that done. So you got sort of like a little, each one on each side of the equation there, Scott.
But I still don't know how Miami made that game close, because it's not like their offense played well. So I mean, the Bills handed them a bunch of points.
Yeah, we'll talk about why they get that game close here when we get to the Buffalo Bills game. But Frank, what's your pick?
I love the Jaguars here, and I hate being against Scott on anything, but I just look at this Jaguars team and it is throwing off so many 2021 Bengals vibes to me. You got the team that's hot late in the year. They've won six in a row. There's an ascending quarterback. Look, I know people aren't watching Jaguars week in and week out, but Trevor Lawrence is the real deal. I get, four interceptions right away last week. Not ideal, but for him to stay in that game, 24-year-old guy in his first playoff game, to throw four touchdowns after that and bring his team all the way back, make all the Chargers jump if you want. Trevor Lawrence still had a lot to do with that. Other quarterbacks would have wilted in that spot. I thought it was huge for him to come back there. I think Trevor can keep him in this game. And I do believe, like Scott said, if you take the points, usually you have to think that this team has a shot to win. And I do. I actually think I think we are going to look up in the fourth quarter and we're going to be like, whoa, the Jaguars got the ball. It's 4 minutes left and they're down 3 points. What are we watching here? They're going to pull off this upset? Because I think that they can take advantage of that Chiefs defense. I think their defense maybe can just a big play or two. We're not asking you to stop Patrick Mahomes. That ain't happening. But maybe you get a couple tide-turning plays. I think with the Jaguars, I think they've been playing really good. The only bad game they've had was at the Lions. And I mean, I'm talking recently, since their bye week. There's no shame in losing to the Lions. We saw the Lions late in the year. That was a good football team. The key for me last week, the Jacksonville Jaguars, as an underdog, won a playoff game when they were -5 in turnover differential. Turnover differential, that ain't going to happen every week, right? This is just a team that overcame. They played really, really well. I think he had a lot of confidence going, and I love the Jaguars. I love them at 8.5. Like Scott said, yes, it does change in the playoffs. I totally agree with him there. But this Chiefs team is still one that doesn't cover a lot of spreads. They get overinflated in the market. I love the Jaguars here. I'll be on the points for sure, and I'll take some on the money line too, just in case.
Yeah, I mean, those are all really good points, and I love your comparison to the 2021 Bengals. And it's it's good to have the number one pick. It's good to get like a franchise changing right. quarterback, you know? And I think obviously teams are going to be bidding like crazy for the number one pick potentially this year. I don't know that there's a Joe Burrow. I don't know there's a Trevor Lawrence in this year's draft. I don't really know anything about that. But it's just when you can get that guy, like, and I love some of the sounders that came out of Lawrence, like, you know, saying, hey, there's not like a 27-point play. Like, we just got to go, you know, we got to go play by play here, just keeping the guys cool. Like, I agree with you, Frank. That was a huge testament to Trevor Lawrence. I'm going to bet against Trevor Lawrence here. I'm going to go with the Chiefs as well, Scott. I just think they're so well-rounded. Andy Reid coming off a bye, as you mentioned, they should be extremely prepared here. But it's no slight to Jacksonville, who I don't think – do I think they're a Super Bowl contender? Do I think they're a real threat there? No, probably not. But at the same time, they are a legit playoff team. They deserve to be here. They have clear-cut roster strengths and not a lot of like, oh, man, that is a glaring, glaring hole. The offense is pretty solid when it could get rolling. The defense has its strengths as well. They're a legit playoff team, but I think at the end of the day, the Chiefs are just a better team. I will take the Chiefs.
You know, I know you can only beat the teams on your schedule. And like, I'm pro-Jaguars, right? I'm pro-Trevor Lawrence. I'm so glad that in a year and in a league that desperately needs quarterbacks to come through, we need this class. His class has been such a mess, right? We don't know if Trey Lance can play. Mac Jones is backslid. Zach Wilson, nobody wants to talk about. Justin Fields has no help in Chicago. We need Trevor Lawrence to be great, and he looks like he's going to be.
Yeah,
he is. But this run they've had, it's still two wins over the Titans, who really have nothing left to give. They beat Zach Wilson and the Jets in a game where it felt like the Jets could have played for 10 hours and they wouldn't have scored a touchdown. There's a Houston win in there. And then last week, yes, did they win minus five in turnovers? Yes. But if I told you before the season, who's the playoff team that will blow a 27-0 lead in the playoffs? I think everybody comes up with the Chargers like, right
Matt,
away.
Wait, is Matt Ryan in the playoffs? No. Well, that is the Chargers.
Yeah. So it's going to be one of two. It's either the Colts or the Chargers. So, you know, the chargering has become a verb. We all know that. So what a lot of people are going to do, if you think the Chiefs win, I mean, you should think a big favorite's going to win, but the spread has you turned off. You could tease
that's another reason I like the Jaguars. Which person in the world isn't going to be on that Chiefs, probably Eagles teaser, right?
Like right. It's America's teaser. And I'll admit, it's as square as it is. That tease is so square, it's divisible by four. But I punched it on Wednesday.
I get it. I hate that when I know everybody's going to be on the same
teaser. Yeah, it's true. It's true. Yeah, think of the worst gambler you know and what they're betting on. Don't bet that. Usually good advice, but I'm falling into that trap this week.
Hey, man, it makes a lot of sense. You know, and again, it's a good point, Scott, about the Jags' strength of schedule, everything like that. I think we'll see if they're really worth the challenge here with this one. Hey, last week we called the Giants-Vikings game the Fraud Bowl. Well, the Giants win the Fraud Bowl, although, you know, maybe it's recency bias, Scott. I'm like, I'm feeling a little bit better about the Giants. Obviously, they win the Fraud Bowl, but, you know, maybe they sort of deserve to be here. Maybe they're like a bit of like the Jaguars, right? You know, that they've got clear roster strengths, but tougher test this week. Giants at Eagles. The Eagles are 7.5-point favorites, 48 over under. Let's start with those Giants when they have the ball. Again, Scott, Daniel Jones, Saquon Barkley coming off excellent days. Well, that's against the Vikings defense. And the Vikings defense is, as we say in the business, not good.
I'm at the point now where I think, you know, the three of us and maybe eight other Yahoo employees could put up 400 yards on that Vikings defense. And the Giants had already seen them too, which I think ended up helping the Giants more than it helped the Vikings in that rematch game. I'm all in on Brian Daboll. I think Daniel Jones is the most improved player in the NFL, certainly the most improved quarterback that I can think of. Because, you know, I mean, the Trevor Lawrence ascension, we all kind of thought that was plausible. I don't know anybody who's banging the table for Daniel Jones before the season. The Giants didn't even pick up his option. Now he's become a guy they have to keep. But what this game to me is going to come down to, obviously quarterback play is huge in the NFL, and we'll get to Hurts a little bit because he's a little bit of a wild card off his recent form. But Jones has been so much of his improvement has been the pocket navigation. We know he's a great runner. He had a fumbling problem early in his career. He's wiped that out. He had the lowest interception rate in the league this year, but here come the Eagles with four different double-digit sack guys. Man, it's not like you're like, okay, we got just, you know, chip and double on this one guy. You don't know who's going to get there, but they all get there. They have a party at the pocket. I'm just afraid that asking this, I really struggled with this game against the spread, by the way, although I did come down with America's tease. We'll get to that in a second, as we did talk about that in the earlier game. But if the Giants win this game, Jones has to play out of his mind. We have to be like, oh my God, give Jones like whatever contract he wants tomorrow or give it to him tonight. Because, and I think maybe he can do that. I'm a believer in Dable. They've made this receiver room work. Isaiah Hodgins, what a pickup, right? I mean, Buffalo tries to sneak him on the practice squad and Dable's like, wait a minute, I know that guy, he can play. And our receivers are kind of sketchy, get him over here. And he looks like their best receiver right now. I mean, when's the last time that's ever happened, right? A waiver wire pickup? That's a fantasy story. It's not an NFL story, right? But it's happened. But it's, you know, Jones, again, in a year where so many quarterbacks went bad, it was just so nice to have Lawrence pop. It was so nice to have Geno Smith pop and Jared Goff be playable. And Daniel Jones is right near the top of that list. I think there were only like 7 or 8 right answers for fantasy this year at quarterback. Daniel Jones was one of them. He's become the Giants' priority. He's going to get, no matter what he does in this game, even if he falls on his face, I think he's going to get a big bag of money and deservedly so, or if nothing else, the franchise tag. That's what it comes down to. He needs to navigate that pocket cleanly, make good decisions, and they need to keep the Giants' offensive line has gelled very nicely the final quarter of the season. Can they keep that diverse Philadelphia pass rush at bay?
Frank, Giants?
Yeah, I mean, everything Scott said, and a problem I had when he was talking about, I totally agree that Daniel Jones has to play out of his mind for them to win this game, but I just can't see that happening. Like, we're going back to last year, I could see Trevor Lawrence doing that. I don't know that I could see Daniel Jones doing it. Again, I think Daniel Jones made strides, of course, but this, man, those receivers, how are they going to beat this Philly defense consistently? I just don't see a way. And Brian Daboll's proven me wrong basically all year. I mean, he can scheme it up. He can get these guys and advantageous situations, but it's hard for me to believe that this Giants defense or just Giants offense really goes nuts against the Eagles defense.
Remember, Eagles defense, number one pass DVOA, 21st run DVOA. Mm. So Saquon Barkley still, he's had a good year. He still doesn't remind me of like rookie year Barkley or early career Barkley, but he's got to be involved in this game too. I can't imagine the Giants are competitive in this game if Barkley isn't around 100 total yards.
Yeah, he had that. I mean, Barkley had that lull, like late November, early December. You're like, okay, he's hitting a wall a little bit. And then he just bounced back. He looks reborn, really.
Yeah. Hey, rest can be a good thing. Week 18 rest. Saquon Barkley looks incredible in the wild card round. That's a great point. I think that they have to get a lot out of Barkley if they're going to pull this upset off. Even though Daniel Jones obviously has to play out of his mind as well. I definitely get spooked a little bit when you think about Evan Neal, who I think will be a good player in time, but has had really rough moments in his rookie year. I mean, you need to look no farther than the guy that he's playing across from at left tackle. Andrew Thomas had some really rough moments to start his career. Now he's like an all-pro stud left tackle. So that can be Evan Neal's career story. But all those pass rushers that you mentioned that the Eagles can throw at you, potentially getting some rookie mistakes out of Evan Neal and then compounding those mistakes with the Daniel Jones mistake, you could see that. We talked about Isaiah Hodgins. Dude, Hodgins can play, man. I really think he's I'll talk about him in the spotlight. Like, I think that was just an inspired pickup by Daboll, by Joe Shane. And I know we're throwing a lot of flowers at Brian Daboll, and deservedly so. I think it'll be a tight race for Coach of the Year, but I think he definitely, if he wins it, you'll get no arguments from me. Mike Kafka, the actual play caller of this team, that was one of the best moves that Brian Daboll made was, hey, this isn't like my college buddy or whatever, but I'm going to go pluck him from a different scheme just because I like what they do, and I'm going to make him the play caller. I'm going to get my hands off that duty. Kafka's been incredible scheming this thing up. I think if he gets a head coaching job just off this run here with the Giants, again, you'll get no argument from me. And same on the defensive side to transition this too. Wink Martindale's not like, again, not a Brian Daboll guy. They both look like two dudes that would just be at the end of the bar. Wink Martindale and Brian Daboll, like just every man type of fellas there, with Wink Martindale wearing the smallest hats on planet Earth. But hey, credit to Wink Martindale, a great hire by Brian Daboll. They went incredibly zone heavy and passive, like didn't send a ton of the typical blitzing that you see out of Wink Martindale's defense at Kirk Cousins, mostly to account for the fact that they're going to, you know, have to zone coverage and bracket up and cloud coverage Justin Jefferson. Do we see something similar there, Frank, with Wink Martindale and how they defend Jalen Hurts and A.J. Brown, all the guys that the Eagles can throw at you?
No, I think I think Justin Jefferson's an exception. And I think you see Wink go right back to the blitzing. That's who they are. That's their identity. That's what they're going to do. They blitz however many percentage points ahead of the rest of the league. Like, they are just a blitz heavy team. And I think for 1 week you had to do that. And I think it threw the Vikings off, and you know, they really struggled to get Jefferson involved. But I just I don't know that they change their identity in the playoffs because of that game. I think that was just the exception. They get right back. They're going to try to force Jalen Hurts into some mistakes, hope he's rusty. I don't think he will be. I think Jalen's going to be just fine. He's played well all year. Why doubt him now? It looks like he's healthy. I do think we're going to see. I think we're going to see the Giants get back to their aggressive ways, and I think we're going to see Philly try to hit some big plays on it and say, okay, we know what you're going to do. This is what we're going to do. Who can stop it? So I think the green light is there for the Eagles to hit some really, really big plays in the pass game.
Yeah, you know, I want to. I did pick the Giants against the spread, although I am on that tease we talked about. But the thing that ultimately shaded me to taking the points is just the fact that Hurts' last two games, and I realized, like, the Chicago game was a while ago, and it's always hard to know what to take from that Week 18 game. And these teams play, the Giants put out their junior varsity, they somehow get the game competitive. But the bottom line is Hurts didn't play well his last two games. He had no touchdown passes, he had multiple interceptions, quarterback rating in the 60s, you know, back of envelope stat, but whatever, we'll use it. And now he's maybe a little dinged up. He's off. It's always the thing where you want the number one seed, you want the week off, but then you come back that first week. Sometimes that first quarter can be kind of sketchy. I almost think if you are a Giants backer in this game, I very trepidantly pick the Giants. I'm not going to bet on them against the spread. But if you were going to do that, I think maybe like a first quarter or first half Giants pick might make more sense. I could see maybe the Eagles do what the Niners do where last week, where they kind of let Seattle hang around. Seattle's leading at halftime, then San Francisco just totally blows them off the field in the second half. I could see this game having that shape. If the Giants are going to win, it's going to be because Hurts was either rusty or not confident. I wonder, why did they not throw the ball? I talked about ETN not being used as a pass catcher. They've totally stopped throwing the ball to Miles Sanders. I don't know if that's a Hurts thing because he's so dynamic as a runner. Sanders had under 100 receiving yards this year, which took me by surprise. It shows you I didn't draft enough Miles Sanders this year. And I certainly think the Giants are going to, as they did last week with Jefferson, they're going to do everything they can to make sure A.J. Brown just doesn't take this game and just destroy it on its own. But how Hurts plays, if Hurts is like MVP candidate Hurts, or if he's like, oh, he hasn't really played a full game or a meaningful game in like 3 or 4 weeks Hurts, that's going to be the big rubber hits the road moment for me.
Frank, what's your spotlight for this game?
Yeah, I just think this is a big game, big spot for the Eagles running backs. I think they're going to get this running game going. We've seen Nick Sirianni turn to the running game, especially last season. They can do that. And I just, look, when I think about game script and how this game's going to go, I mean, not to give away my pick, but I'm going to be on the Eagles. I think it's going to be a blowout. So you're going to have a chance for Miles Sanders. I mean, his over-under right now, 66.5. I think he smashes that. We all know Boston Scott, Giants killer, right? We've heard about. I think he gets involved too. I just think there's a game where they're not going to want to expose Hurts that much. They're not going to play scared, I don't think. They're not going to try to put him in saran wrap or plastic wrap or whatever to keep him safe against the blitzes. But you also don't want him throwing 45 times either. I think that this is a game where they take a run-heavy approach, and I think that there's yards to be had. I think Miles Sanders has a big game. I think others contribute. I think it's a big game for the Eagles' run game. Whether it's they're just dynamic out of the gate like they were against the Packers when they ran for 8 million yards or whatever that was on a Sunday night, or just in the second half they're up 17 points and they just let those guys seal the game.
Yeah, I think a lot of different paths for that one to hit. I like that. For my spotlight, again, I'll mention just Isaiah Hodgins. I think the dude, I don't know how the rest of his career is going to play out, but I definitely think he can ball. And like, you don't just step onto the field, as you mentioned, Sky, you don't just step onto the field and become like the best receiver on the team if your fundamentals aren't tight, if your technique's not tight, if you're spacing against zone coverage and you know, the ability to sit down and make yourself open. You don't get on the field if you can't do that stuff. And he's certainly proven that. Another testament to Brian Daboll, by the way, that they didn't mess around with like, oh, Kenny Galladay's got a big contract, let's make that work. Like,
right.
Kadarius Toney, former first round pick, let's make that work. It's like, nah, we don't care about that. Like, we'll just get the best players on the field. And that has definitely been what Hodges has been for them. Also, I think this is a big Daniel Jones rush game. So if you're looking for a prop, he's 44.5 right now from a rushing yard standpoint, Daniel Jones. I think he gets at least 50 in this one. He had 6 for 59 as a scrambler alone last week. But let's get into our picks. We've spoiled them a little bit here. But Scott, deliver your final hammer here on America's Tease.
Yeah, I want people to take that tease, the two favorites on Saturday. I lean Giants against the spread, but that's only, you know, I'll do that in my pools. I'm not going to bet a penny on it. Isn't it sad, by the way, you mentioned Kenny Galladay. I've never seen a receiver get praised as much for like one or two blocks in a game like Kenny Golladay was, because people just, they feel so bad for him. They want to see something nice about him.
The NFL account tweeted it out. Like, they tweeted out a highlight of him blocking and being like, look at Kenny G throwing those blocks.
All of a sudden, Kenny Golladay is Joe Thomas or John Hanna or Anthony Munoz at their peak. Right. Okay, that's good to know. Good to know. America's teased, man. That's what I'm really on here. I'm on the Chiefs of the Eagles, square as it may be.
Frank, I know you spoiled a little bit, but you are on the Eagles here.
Yeah, I think Eagles rested. One stat that just keeps coming up in my mind, the Eagles are 14-1 when Jalen Hurts is a quarterback. This is a really, really good football team. I know they lulled a little bit late in the year. Some of that was Hurts injury related, not all of it. But I just think that they're rested. They're just better. The Giants have had this dream season, dream first season for Daboll, right? They make the playoffs when nobody expected it, win their first playoff game since Eli beat Brady in a Super Bowl. It's house money for them at this point. I just think that they've kind of come to the end of the road, and this great run for them ends. I think Eagles just, I just think it's a blowout. I don't think the Giants can really stay with them. Although, look, the Giants are playing really well. They're really well coached, getting better late in the year. Maybe this is the one pick I make that just looks really, really dumb, but I don't see how the Giants keep this within 7.5.
I would be happy to be wrong about the Giants here, because I've been happy to be wrong about them all year long. I love a well-coached team, a smooth operation when everything comes together like this. But I'm with you, Frank. I'm on the Eagles as well. And it comes back to what you said and what we were talking about with the Giants defense and Wink Martindale. And I think the Tiger goes back to his stripes here a little bit. And there's man coverage, there's blitz heavy stuff. And, you know, if you're going to dedicate extra resources to stopping AJ Brown, you're going to man up with AJ Brown, he can still crush you. But that's going to leave Devontae Smith over in isolated coverage. They got Dallas Goedert back healthy. Those tight end screens with Dallas Goedert are a great way to beat the blitz. They're a great way to beat man coverage. And then it comes back to the run game, as you highlighted as well, Frank. I just think the Eagles have so many different ways they can get over on this defense. And I don't know that I see the Giants being able to hang here from a points perspective, the pass rush the Eagles can throw at you. So I'm on the Eagles here, and I feel it's probably my most confident pick of the four games. So that's why the Giants will win the game. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to hit the last two games of the divisional round.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
All right, we're back. Bengals at Bills. We're going to get the full game here. Bills -5.5, 48.5 over under. Let's talk about when the Bengals have the ball. Scott, I would argue that this Bengals offensive line, it's definitely the biggest talking point for them coming into this game. I'd argue this might be worse than the group that they took to the Super Bowl last year, which we all talked about as a big problem. Burrow was only blitzed on 10% of his dropbacks, was still under a good bit of pressure, 5.8 yards per attempt under pressure against Baltimore. Jackson Carmen is just you can't trust that guy out there. You can't trust a lot of these replacements they got out there, Scott. It's a big problem for Cincinnati right now.
Yeah, it's probably the biggest element in this game is can Cincinnati – generally, the idea with offensive lines when you have problems is that you can mask the issues more in the passing game than running game. If you don't have a good offensive line, you will not run block. But maybe you can do some creative things in the passing game and with your pass blocking. And this is the Bengals coaches really have their work cut out for them here. I don't know how they won last week. 234 yards of offense. I mean, I know how they won. They got the crazy, a turnover at their goal line and ran it back. You're just one of those once-in-a-lifetime plays, right? Like the James Harrison play in the Super Bowl. Although I guess the Bills had one against Lamar Jackson a couple of years ago, too. They had a run back of 101 yards. Buffalo was going to win that game anyway. But Baltimore has to feel like, man, we had that game. That game was in our hip pocket. And between that turnover and then running an offense, like the 11 guys on offense had never played together before in the final. Apparently playing with your backup quarterback turns your offense, it just goes kablooey in the final 2 minutes. We saw Miami struggle with that. And they were in that Buffalo game, and then they couldn't get a playoff. I wonder if McDaniel was calling the calculus plays when he should have been calling the algebra 2 plays or whatever. Just, you know, simplify it, man. We got to get a snap off before the play clock.
I was going to say,
expires.
How about call a play? How about call a play?
That'd be nice.
What's
be
more
nice.
Frustrating? When you see that play clock running down, and most of the time you're like, oh, they got this. They know this. They're just going to snap it right at the, you know, right at the zero or whatever, and they get the benefit of the doubt. But they look so discombobulated. Like, no, this play has no chance of being run. And even if it is run, it's probably going to be dead on arrival. That was really frustrating, but it's just disappointing to me. It's sad to me, frustrating. We all know what happened when Buffalo and Cincinnati played the last time, and DeMar Hamlin's awful injury in that moment that everybody shared in real time. And it's so inspiring to see Hamlin not only improving physically, but just using it as a moment to unify everybody and using it for his celebrity for good and all that. I mean, that's a great kumbaya moment for the NFL, and we need stuff like that. But unfortunately, now the Bengals finally get this game. They have to play it on the road. They can't protect Burrow. This is a team that needs an intermediate and deep passing game to do what they do. And I don't think they're going to be confident with – if I were Burrow, we talked about like Tom Brady wanting to get rid of the ball. I mean, Joe Burrow will take the hits to set up a play, but, man, he got beaten up last week. And Buffalo's defense, yeah. I know it can be leaky at times in the secondary because they've had injuries, and obviously Hamlin's not a part of it now. But I just see Burrow getting sacked 4 or 5 times in this game, and that's a huge problem. Now – I still might pick Cincinnati when we get to that segment because Buffalo has issues too, but I don't see how the offensive line for the Bengals is going to give them a great chance. This spread has gone up the whole week, right? I don't know exactly what it opened up at, but it's gone to 5.5. I wouldn't even be surprised if it went higher before kickoff because I don't think anybody's confident Joe Burrow is going to be standing for 3 hours.
Frank, how are we feeling about the Bengals offense right now?
I mean, you hate the cluster injuries. I mean, you lose an offensive lineman, yeah, it stinks, but usually, you know, I mean, we're seeing that with the Cowboys. The Cowboys lose Jason Peters. They're going to be able to shuffle things and be fine. You start talking about three? All right, now you're really a critical mass. That is the one thing that worries me about the Bengals in this game. But if any team knows how to make a Super Bowl with a bad offensive line, it's the Cincinnati Bengals. They did it last year, so maybe they can adjust. It's the one factor in this game that if that wasn't on the board, if we didn't have to worry about that, I'd be really, really confident in the Bengals' ability to just kind of move the ball up and down. And I know the Bills had statistically a really, really good defense in the regular season. Maybe they're missing Von Miller a little bit, but this just isn't that defense that we saw maybe early in the year. I think the Bengals are going to be fine, and I just have this kind of weird blind faith that they'll figure it out on the offensive line.
God, man, I haven't thought about Von Miller in a minute, and this would be a good time for that signing to be paying off right
now.
Right. You know, this would be a good time for that. Let's move to when the Bills have the ball. And Scott, we talked about why was Miami able to keep it close? Josh Allen, bro, settle down, man. I don't know if it's just like the entire offense is structured around Josh Allen. And I don't know if he's like taken on too much of that pressure at this point, but it's like it feels like he has to play hero ball every single second. It feels like he's run every drive is like a 2 minute drive for Josh Allen. He's trying to go win a game, but every drive is not like that. Last week, 15% sack rate against the Miami Dolphins. And we talked a lot about the Bengals offensive line. I think it's definitely a bigger problem. The Bills have offensive line issues that Miami was able to take advantage of last week. Definitely just not getting the ball, not getting to the scramble fast enough. 15.6 air yards per target last week. We're back at this point where Allen is not taking those checkdowns, and that could be a problem. I don't know that the Bengals will play Josh Allen the same way they played Tyler Huntley last week. They blitzed Huntley on 50% of his dropbacks last week. I don't think we see that, but you know, Lou Anarumo can certainly – he could certainly devise a great game plan, Frank. You know, he could certainly devise something to keep right. this offense, you know, in chaos mode. And unfortunately, I think Josh Allen just really is he could turn around at any point. He's a great player. And I'm not even saying that he's playing poorly, but he is playing too chaotic. That is for sure.
Yeah, I honestly just don't like what I've seen out of the Bills lately. And this is somebody I picked up to win the Super Bowl. I have some future bets that I would really like to cash on the Bills. But I look at this team and it's just not special lately. And a big part of the reason is Josh Allen. He just hasn't really been great since that elbow injury. And last week, it just seemed like that whatever, here you go. Here's an interception. Here's a fumble. Like, it just seemed like they were so disjointed in that game, and just he gets loose with the ball a lot of times. And if Dak threw some of the interceptions he threw, it'd be a week-long crisis across our nation. But Dak Prescott's got to be banned from the NFL because he's so terrible. Josh Allen throws it. You're like, oh, there goes gunslinger Josh. Like, he's got to be better with the football if they're going to win this game, much less win a Super Bowl. I just worry about – and I think it comes – I mean, this is something you guys have talked about all season, and I've obviously noticed too. This offense is so weirdly reliant on two guys. It's Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs. There's nothing else. I get Dawson Knox is on a touchdown heater. Devin Singletary is a fine back. James Cook can make some plays. Gabe has his games every here and there. But they're just so reliant on Allen to Diggs that it just puts so much pressure on Allen that I just don't know that this is a great situation for him to succeed. Because once you start to put that pressure on yourself, you start to force it. You start to turn it over. That kind of cascades on you a bit. So I have a lot of questions about this Bills team on offense, on defense. Maybe I'd reverse jinx it so these Super Bowl picks get through. But, it's just not the – we expected the Bills to be a special team, and they're just not right now. And a lot of that is just this offense is – it's strangely constructed.
It's just weird to see Josh Allen get sacked 7 times in any game, and he's had this turnover problem lately. My friend and breakfast table colleague Mike Salfino says he's doing a lot of what Favre would do when Favre was still a good player, but he wasn't a perfect player, with like the no, yes throws and the yes, 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 no throws. Allen's been kind of a carnival ride, and it's a challenge for the Bills. They need to win 4 games to win the Super Bowl. They didn't get the number one seed. Can Allen play 4 clean games? Didn't play a clean game last week. He gave a Miami team that really had no right being competitive in that game. That was a 1-score game. I think everybody thought once Buffalo got ahead 17-0, okay, you can basically end this one now, put Miami on the bus, this game's over. And it was anything but that. And it was really because Buffalo left so many points on the field, so many negative plays. I wish I liked the Bengals defense a little bit more. I wish they had like a top 5 defense. They don't. They have an okay defense. It's probably slightly above league average. But I never thought midway through the season that Buffalo would here would be with Buffalo number 2 seed, home game, 5.5 point favorite. And I'm not sure what version of Josh Allen we're getting, but here we are.
Yeah. I get it, man. It's hopefully we get the good version. That would be awesome. But it's definitely a concern. That's for sure. I like your point though about the Bengals defense, and I'll come back to that here in just a second, but Scott, I keep it going here with, I know you talk about the struggles to potentially run the ball here. Joe Mixon, I mean, 48.5 rushing over under here for Joe Mixon, and that even feels like a lot at this point.
Yeah, it's a really low number to beat, but Mixon hasn't had a great season. He had that one big, 5 touchdown game, and then basically otherwise he was like kind of like a running back too, barely creeping inside the top 20. And again, when the offensive line has problems, right? When it's leaky, when every team can lose one guy and maybe figure it out, but you can't lose 3. There's no way to mask that in the running game. There's no amount of creativity that's going to make up for that. And I haven't seen the burst from Mixon anyway. I think they're going to try to get him involved because they don't want Burrow to try to win the game on his own. They probably don't want him throwing 45 passes if they can't protect him adequately. But this is screaming out Mixon's going to have like 15 carries, 41 yards. I feel pretty confident that's an under you have to punch.
Frank, your spotlight leads perfectly out of
Scott's. I was going to say, I'm on the Joe Burrow train here. 275.5 for his passing yards is high against a really good defense. But just to Scott's point, once the running game shuts down, you have Joe Burrow. You're going to say, okay, Joe, you got to figure this out. Go do it. And I think he can. I think he's a special player. He really is. I love Joe Burrow. As I've said often, especially when we talk to Charles on You Probably Win a Game, there's 5 dudes on this planet who just are above everybody else. It doesn't matter. Coach doesn't matter. Scheme doesn't matter. Teammates. They're going to figure it out because they're that great. He is in that group. And I think he goes over 275.5. I think he goes over 1.5 passing touchdowns. I think there's a Joe Burrow game where the Bengals need him to ball out in a shootout to win this thing. And I think he's perfectly capable of going toe-to-toe with Josh Allen. So, overs on Burrow for me.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. I'll keep pounding the overs on Steph Diggs. And look, it's 81.5 receiving yards. I get it. That's a big number. But, Scott, you brought up, I wish I liked their defense more. Last week, watching them against the Ravens, the Cincinnati Bengals, and DeMarcus Robinson's putting a double move on an outside corner there. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. Not only do they have injury problems on the offensive line, they also have huge injury problems at corner that haven't really shown up all year, but damn did they start showing up against Baltimore there. Again, it's DeMarcus Robinson. You don't want that to happen to you. You know, Stephon Diggs, Gabe Davis, I think they can get over on those outside
corners. You know, the Ravens wide receiver room is so antiquated. They still have like a VCR in there, you know? Yeah, right. That, they need a fresh coat of paint. They need to just like raise that room and just build it from scratch. Terrible.
By the way, real quick to your point, Matt, on Stephon Diggs and the overs. I love taking overs on guys who can get it mostly in one play. And we know Stephon Diggs, Josh Allen looking for him. They're trying to hit that 50-yard play. So
100%.
You get one of those and you're halfway home. Man.
Also, because they don't love their red zone offense, right? I mean, they're looking to make a shot. When they get around midfield, that's when they're really looking to hit that 45, 50-yard touchdown because they get frustrated when the space gets constricted. That's been a problem with this offense this year.
Yeah, it definitely has. And it's just like the lack of reliable guys beyond Stephon Diggs in that passing game. Although Dawson Knox has had a couple moments here for sure. For all this, that particular matchup really is what has me. I'll go ahead and pick this game. I'm on the Bills. I know it's a 5.5 is a decent size number here, but I'll still take it. I think that Josh Allen settles down here. I think that they get some of those mistakes figured out. Like having that sort of slap in the face moment against Miami while also still winning the game can end up, I think, being a good moment for Buffalo, realizing that, like, all right, we don't need to like throw the ball to Cole Beasley every single time he's on the field. You know, we can let that
please stop. He's got to stop Cole Beasley. Doesn't happen anymore.
I know he got the one touchdown, but he was also definitely 100% responsible pretty much for that one interception as well. So I would love to see more of Khalil Shakir. They might get Isaiah McKenzie back in this game as well. You know, not that McKenzie or even probably Shakir is like a world beater or anything, but I think that should help the matter a little bit. Give me the Bills here. I think they rebound. Scott, what about you?
I just don't think there's anything that can flap or phase the Bengals, right? No matter what the score is, no matter how many times you hit Burrow, he's still just going to do what he does. I think they'll get Ja'Marr Chase involved in this game, T. Higgins involved in this game, maybe even some of the stuff over the middle to Hurst, this tight end they generally don't feature. So I just, Burrow has such gravitas and cojones in a big moment. I think they keep it a competitive game and you have to take the points.
Frank, what about you?
Yeah, same. You know, you get to this point in the season or doing this for years, you're rarely surprised by a point spread. I was surprised that this wasn't -3, your standard -3. And then it went up. And I get the offensive line issues, but if you're asking me since, well, let's say the beginning of November, which team was better, the Bengals or the Bills, you can make a clear case that it was the Bengals. If not a clear case, you would be like, it was about even, 50-50. I mean, who knows? It's a coin flip there. So I don't know why this spread is 5.5. I really am surprised by it. Bengals could win this game. Why not? Like, we again, you know, you mentioned, Scott, that Monday night game. We didn't see much of it. But in that small sample size, we saw the Bengals just moving the ball. Like, it wasn't like they were worried about the Bills' defense in any way. It looked like they were going to win that game. Who knows? I mean, it was a long, long way to go.
We'll never know. I really think Cincinnati was going to win that night. I really do.
Yeah, I do too. And I, like you said, they're not fazed by anything. They're not worried by anything. The only reason that this isn't one of those the smash play for me like the Cowboys last week or something is the offensive line. Yes, I could see Burrow getting sacked 9 times and this really falls apart and he presses, he throws some stuff. But if that doesn't happen, if they can protect him a little bit, I think the Bengals are in play for the win here. I don't know. I'm trying to land on that narrow runway of Bengals cover Bills win. I think that it's going to happen. But it wouldn't surprise me at all if the Bengals won this game straight up. They're at very worst equal to the Bills over the last couple of months of the season.
Don't feel good going against the betting bros here, but I am on this one. Let's move to the final game here. Cowboys at 49ers. 49ers are, compared to all these others, a measly 3.5-point favorite, 46.5 over under here. Let's start when the Cowboys have the ball. And Frank, I mean, you absolutely nailed it last week with the Cowboys that they're just a better team than the Bucks. And it was because they got a great performance out of their quarterback. Dak Prescott had the fourth best total EPA in a playoff game since 2006. He was awesome. You could see it when watching him. After those first couple drives, he was just completely dialed in. We got a great Kellen Moore game, but do we get anything close to that sort of performance out of Dak Prescott and Kellen Moore against a much, much better defense again in the San Francisco 49ers, Frank?
Yeah, I want everybody to listen. Just stop. I have a crazy, crazy take here. Dak Prescott's a good quarterback. Can we stop trying to make him out to be this terrible quarterback? Like, he's basically the new Kirk Cousins, where no matter what Dak does, people are going to just can't wait to rip him. Oh, Dallas needs a new quarterback. No, Dak Prescott's good. I get that he threw a lot of interceptions. He's not one of those five dudes walking the planet who could carry his team, but he's really good. And he showed that last Monday. And yeah, I get the Buccaneers stink, but the Buccaneers defense is actually not that bad. And he torched them. The interceptions, yes, they're a problem. And it might pop up here against a phenomenal 49ers defense. But I think Dak's got the goods. I think that CeeDee Lamb, they don't have a lockdown corner in San Francisco. That's a team effort they got there. I think CeeDee Lamb can have a big game here. I think a running game is going to need to get going a little bit. It's hard against that defense. I get it. But I think that's going to have to happen to take some pressure off Dak's shoulder so he doesn't start throwing the ball around everywhere. But, I mean, there's a thing, you know, making rounds on Twitter today of Taylor the Tape, Brock Purdy versus Dak.
I was just going to ask you about that.
Oh, my goodness. What are we doing here? What are we doing here? Dak Prescott is light years ahead of Brock Purdy. He is so much better than Brock Purdy. And I don't get it. I don't get the disrespect for Dak. As long as we keep it in context. Again, no, he's not Patrick Mahomes. He's a really, really good quarterback that he showed at Monday night. And I think he's going to play well in this game, even against a really, really good 49ers defense.
My challenge for Dallas is Ezekiel Elliott, Tony Pollard. I've been saying it all season. Obviously, Pollard's a younger back. He's a more explosive back. But Pollard, 5.9 yards per touch. Zeke, 3.9 yards per touch. The 49ers should offer the Cowboys like $50,000 for every Zeke touch. Okay, just do it, okay? Payable in cash after every snap. Because they're best. And look, I give Dallas credit. At least the usage has gotten, it's almost the 50-50 backfield now. They're both going to have packages. And look, when you get in close, you want Zeke to be maybe like the later part of Jerome Bettis' career. He's the one-yard touchdown guy. That's fine. But if the Cowboys get out of San Francisco, if they lose this game and Tony Pollard didn't get like 13 to 15 touches, they've really screwed up.
And that was a problem in the 49ers game last year that like, all right, we're not getting a lot of plays for CeeDee. We're not getting a lot of plays for Tony Pollard. Amari Cooper obviously was on the team at the time too. Is like, we're too much Zeke, too much to the tight ends. And obviously, Dalton Schultz coming off a big game last week, but still that was a big problem last year, Scott. I don't think Kellen Moore will make the same mistake twice. Cause I agree with you. Like if we're not inside the 10 yard line and Zeke is getting like a first and 10 carry, you're wasting that down pretty much, especially against San Francisco, who's the best run defense in the entire NFL. Let's transition to when the 49ers have the ball. I have a serious note and a non-serious note. The serious note is almost one third of Brock Purdy's attempts against the Seahawks, according to Next Gen Stats, went to a target that had at least 5 yards of separation.
That's insane.
That is why, Frank, it's so crazy that on that graphic that you mentioned that's going around on Twitter, the Taylor Tape thing, I think it's from NFL Network, that like, oh, Brock Purdy's more accurate than Dak Prescott.
It's easy.
Okay.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Sure. He is. My non-serious note is like, hey, if you're Dallas, you just got to clench and hope to not explode. Like you're trying to make it to the toilet in time, man. You just got to clench and just hope you don't let anything go out because man, this offense could really erupt there in San Francisco, just like they did in the second half, Frank, like against the Seahawks. The Seahawks had a pretty good first half. They were perfectly fine, but like at the end of the day, that offense with all that space, all that separation, all those athletes just absolutely erupted and exploded in the second half against the Seattle Seahawks. And Dallas definitely has a better defense, but is it good enough to prevent that onslaught that seems inevitable with the 49ers right now?
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, yes, the avalanche could come at any time, but Brock Purdy has not faced a defense as good as the 49ers. This defense was number 2 in DVOA over the season. Don't get the respect they deserve. I think the Cowboys have a top 5 defense, whether you believe DVOA or any other stats.
Yeah.
This is the best defense Brock Purdy has faced. And maybe the 49ers, if Brock doesn't come out hot, maybe they get one dimensional. That's not going to work great against the Cowboys. I don't know. I think that this is going to be a much bigger challenge for the 49ers offense than they've had since Jimmy G got hurt. Of course, the 49ers could go for 40 on anybody. Once they get it cranking and Kyle's in his bag of calling all these plays to get those 5 yards of separation, that's Kyle. That's the Kyle Shanahan stat. That's it's straight up. It's a silly stat that he threw that many open receivers. But I think this Cowboys defense is well more equipped than Seattle or Washington or Arizona or whoever else Brock Purdy faced to shut them down a little bit. And it's going to be a bigger challenge for them than they've faced yet since Chuji got hurt.
I'm a little concerned that Brock Purdy hasn't, in boxing terms, tasted his own blood yet, really. I mean, he had kind of a so-so first half against Seattle, but for the most part, it's been pretty smooth sailing. His efficiency numbers has been just as good as Garoppolo's, but they haven't thrown the ball as much when Purdy's played. That to be expected, right? We're talking about a seventh round pick who was, you know, if they, you told the Giants on the Giants, the Niners on draft day that Purdy would just make it as a long-term backup, they'd be like, oh yeah, good pick. They certainly weren't expecting him to need to play, let alone quarterback and helm playoff games. But the Niners offense, you get every quarterback truth serum and said, okay, what skill talent would you like to play with? Just have imported to your roster tomorrow. I think almost every quarterback would be, give me the Niners stuff. This is the ultimate SUV. Like all the packages, all the trimmings. It's just got the heated seats and it's got the power steering and it gets this unbelievable gas mileage. And you have Kittle, who's an all-world tight end. And Debo, you know, that draft, why did the Patriots take Nikhil Harry? But Debo Samuel, you can run so many things with him. McCaffrey's going to probably be the one or two pick in fantasy next year, and you can do so many things with him. Elijah Mitchell's a good number two back. Brandon Ayuk is an outstanding receiver. He might be the fourth best skill player on this team. Dallas is a great defense. I believe in DVOA. I believe in Dallas's defense. But I just don't know, unless they can rattle Purdy. And if I were Dallas, I would almost look. I'd come after Purdy. And I'm not saying, I would never say play dirty. But if you do get like a roughing the passer early, if you rattle the cage a little bit, I don't think that would be the worst thing in the world. Because if they're going to win this game, they need Brock Purdy to question himself. They need him to not be confident, to not be decisive. But man, I think the 49ers, if every team had the same, if we said there's an automatic quarterback play for all eight teams, there's no differentiation. We have a robot quarterback. I think far and away the 49ers are the best offense and the best team in football. I think they're going to the Super Bowl, and I think they're going to take care of Dallas here.
I mean, shoot, Scott, you're not advocating for taking a page out of the Mac Jones playbook if you're saying get a roughing the passer call early if you're Dallas. You sneeze a little too close to a quarterback, you know, right now. You give him you cough while you're taking him down for a sack. You're getting a roughing the passer.
Wait. I already mentioned Nikhil Harry. Why did you have to mention Mac Jones and just like ruin my day, man? Not to mention all your stuff about the explosion. I just had a bunch of plumbing work done this morning. You know, my wallet. Wallet. I don't have enough for a buy-in now, Frank. You know, I gotta
troll it over here.
I gotta borrow some money from my college professor to play poker this weekend. You know, what's going on? Finally get a round of reference in there. But this offense is so much fun. It's a joy.
It's really fun.
In a year where so many teams couldn't get out of their own way, even playoff teams, nobody wants to watch the Ravens offense. It's horrible, right? No, you know, I don't think we're going to miss the Chargers. You know, they just fired their offensive coordinator 10 seconds after that. You know, two offensive coordinators get fired after playoff losses. I mean, there's a lot of bad offenses here. The 49ers, they're the treat. They're the dessert. You know, you eat your vegetables so you get to watch the 49ers game.
I mean, listen, I'm 100% with you there. For spotlights for this game, Frank, you do think, though, this is the time when Purdy finally comes back to earth a little bit.
Yeah, and I'm not one of these guys that thinks he's a fluke or anything like that. I don't want to trash him every week. But again, best defense he has faced. His over-under right now is 243.5. And let me tell you, there are multiple paths for him going under. Either he struggles against maybe what's the second best defense in the NFL and just doesn't get there. Maybe the 49ers get out to a big lead and it's just, hey, who wants some carries? Because we're going to run the clock out in the second half and we're going to have Brock Purdy throw three times. There's just ways for him to go under that total. I don't see him going over it. And therefore, I can't tell you I would take the over on George Kittle 47.5 or Debo over 54.5. Whatever passing game totals there are for the Niners, I would not advocate an over. I think this is going to be a game where they try to grind it a little bit, keep Purdy safe to the point where he's throwing 15 times maybe. And whether that works or not, we'll see. But don't think the 49ers passing game gets off the ground in here.
Big problem with Kittle is he's so valuable as a blocker. He's an extension of their offensive line. And obviously you want to chip, you want to keep people away from Purdy. It keeps his fantasy ceiling a little bit capped. I did talk about last week about how he's on a touchdown heater with Purdy. They still do have that connection. But Kittle's too valuable as an offensive lineman to ever be a target dominator. And that always kind of – you have to separate the real-life value of George Kittle to the fantasy value of George Kittle. My fate is really simple here. Zeke Elliott is Dak Prescott. Zeke Elliott just looks like a compromised player right now. I don't know if the Cowboys are going to give him some of these legacy touches, but when he's sitting at 9 carries for 15 yards, they're going to have to pull the plug on that. This is the best run defense in football. It's possible Dallas gets behind in the game. It is a road game. They are an underdog against probably the best offensive pieces in the league right now. So I think Zeke either loses touches through efficiency or the game flow gets out of hand, I think he's going to well under his rushing prop. And in any kind of contest where you get to pick whoever you want, DFS or start one and done, I wouldn't go near Zeke Elliott this week.
The rushing line prop for Elliott right now is 34.5, which is
going under.
Which is nothing. If you, for whatever reason, think he's getting 34.5 rush or 35 rushing yards in this game, you go ahead and take the over and parlay that with the 49ers money line. Because if Elliott's getting that many carries and he's going over 40 yards or something, they win. 49ers are winning that game, all right?
What are the problems with Zeke? I know it's apples and oranges, but Frank talked about, like, you know, one of the good things about a Diggs props, he can get there in one play. Jalen Waddle can get there in one play. Tyreek Hill can get there in one play. Zeke is not a home run hitter. Pollard's a home run hitter. Zeke is like, you're hoping to get a 7-yard run, a 9-yard run, maybe get to the second level, but he's not. It's not going to be, you know, oh, how did I got to the game late? Dallas is on the board. It's not going to be Ezekiel Elliott 55-yard touchdown. That doesn't exist.
Yeah, no, not in this current universe that we live in. But the guy that I'll do the spotlight on here, I will take another massive game for Debo. Talked about him in the spotlight last week. And Frank, like, I know that you're kind of down on the 49ers pass game here, and I mean, I get it. I think this could be the moment where we see some more rookie mistakes from Purdy here. But Debo is a guy who can get it in one play.
Yeah.
Last week we saw Trayvon Diggs shadow around with Mike Evans. We could certainly see that with Brandon Ayuk as the primary kind of outside receiver there. And there are just so many advantageous matchups at that second cornerback position. I know we didn't see it a ton, but with Brady and stuff with the Bucs last week, but they still got Mike Evans loose. Obviously, the play didn't connect because it's the 2022 Bucs, but they still got Mike Evans loose deep in that game late. I think we could see some big plays here in spurts maybe for the 49ers pass game. So I do like the 54.5 receiving yards over for Debo Samuel in this one. But let's go into the picks here. I'll get us started. I'm on the 49ers. I'm on all the home teams, all the favorites with the and laying the points. Not good. There's no way that's correct. But I'll go with 49ers here. I just think they are too overwhelming as an offense. I think their defense is good enough to certainly keep Dak from not having the game that he had last week. And again, Scott, it's the talent, the overwhelming nature of that offense, the scheme, everything put together. A ship that the 49ers have been building for years. And oddly enough, I think Brock Purdy's a good enough captain for it to get over the line here.
I do too. And, you know, Dallas seemed really satisfied with itself. Congratulations. You just beat the 8-9 Tampa Bay Buccaneers, where everybody on that team is like 47 years old. Way to go. You guys are awesome. Not only do I like
The alternative, Scott, not to interrupt, but the alternative is like they live in hell for the next like 5 months if they lose that game. So maybe it's not even just the winning they're celebrating. It's the, you know what? We didn't lose. Thank God we don't have to live in that world.
I do think the playoffs are always interesting when Dallas is in them, and I think any Super Bowl matchup that would include Dallas would be really fun, but the 49ers have the best roster in football. Certainly, if every quarterback was averaged out, you would take the Niners roster, and not only do I feel confident enough that San Francisco covers to 3.5, but I think you could actually buy up the point spread, take San Francisco to cover a 7-point spread or an 8-point spread or something like that, and get some odds in your favor. I think this is the one game I think is going to get out of hand because Dallas is going to get behind, and San Francisco, D'Amico Ryan's probably headed towards a head coaching job next year. Well merited. This is not a team you want to fall behind against. And Dallas, I just don't trust, you know, McCarthy and Shanahan. I know you could poke holes in Kyle Shanahan. It's not like he's, you know, beyond reproach. I mean, he had the 28-3 comeback was on his watch and stuff like that. But you're telling me I get Shanahan against McCarthy? I love it, you know? You're telling me I get a team at home? You tell me I get a team that has more options in the skill game? All I need is Dak Purdy. to learn the names of these players. All I need is Brock Purdy to not pumpkin, to not all of a sudden, you know, remind us why he went in the 7th round, remind us why he wasn't really considered a prospect. As long as Purdy doesn't face plant, I think the Niners roll by double digits.
Frank, you're going down with your Cowboys.
How about them Cowboys? I remember back in the summer, you guys know I do the power rankings, the team previews, count them down. I had Cowboys fans in my mentions on Twitter. Like, why are you ranking the Cowboys so high? What are you thinking? This team is not good. And I did have after Dak got hurt in week one, I did have that moment of, wow, maybe I was wrong. The Cowboys are really bad. But if I'm not overreacting to the Buccaneers game, I promise, because if you take out, and this is a tough game to play, I get it. You take out week one, where they just look terrible. I don't know what happened in that game. You take out week 18, where they had nothing to play for. This is a 12-3 football team. Yeah. Somehow the Dallas Cowboys flew under the radar all season long. We were so enamored with Philly early, so enamored with the 49ers late. that the Cowboys just kept winning games. And maybe it's because they didn't win their division, but whatever. Philadelphia is really, really good. I do look, Scott, you're right. McCarthy versus Shanahan scare the heck out of me, but Prescott versus Purdy should scare the heck out of the 49ers. Like, I know he has not, I can't sit here and say like, oh, he's just going to fall apart at some point because it hasn't happened yet. But Prescott's a far better quarterback in this game. And I think these two teams are really comparable. I do. I think the Cowboys defense is not at the 49ers level, but it's close. I think the Cowboys options on offense aren't the 49ers options, but they do have some dudes like Pollard and CD, and even Dalton Schultz is playing really well. I see the Cowboys winning this game straight up. I'm going to tell the line just moved to 4 as we've been recording this. I'm going to take the Cowboys plus 4, all I can get. I'm going to take them on the money line. I think this is the one road team that goes in there and I feel really good about it. I just think this Cowboys team is really, really good. And the 49ers are great. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to shade the 49ers at all. They have been awesome. But I just think that we're just so focused on how good the 49ers are that we've lost sight of the fact that the Cowboys are really good too. And I think they're totally live here. And, you know, there's going to be an upset this week. There's going to be a road team that wins straight up. And yeah. I think it's going to be the Cowboys. I really do. Maybe the Bengals too. Maybe the Jaguars making me look smart and pull that thing off. But the Cowboys are the one where I look and I say, this is what I could really get behind as an upset pick. Because I think the Cowboys are, they have a Super Bowl roster. It wouldn't shock me if the Cowboys won a Super Bowl. And just because we've all been kind of drawn off the scent of the Cowboys, nobody wants to really talk about them that way. But I'm really all about this Cowboys team. I think they're very, very good. As long as basically Dak has to play mistake-free football like he did last week. McCarthy can't get in the way here. If those two things happen, two big what-ifs right there, right? But if that happens, I think the Cowboys are fully live in this game.
Spoiler. Mike McCarthy got in the way. I'm just telling you right now. Tomorrow's headlines today.
There is a, you know, there's the, so the headline scenario,
Monday.
Yeah.
The headline Monday will be: can Jerry Jones really continue this Mike McCarthy thing? Yeah. I mean, come on.
There is a scenario where I'm sitting there in whatever quarter, and I'm looking at my TV, going, "I bet on this guy." Really?
I'm with you on the Cowboys. They could beat anybody left in the league. Really, granted, there's no unbeatable team anyway. It's a year where everybody's got some flaw. I get it, but. I think any matchup with the Cowboys going deep, if they get Philly again, that Philadelphia-Dallas game, even though Minshew played, was one of the best games of the year. That felt like a playoff game.
Real quick, because I'm just curious, because I don't know that I have the answer in very brief terms. Who you guys picked to win a Super Bowl right now?
Kansas City.
Same with you, Matt?
Kansas City. It could be. There's 6 teams that can win it.
Yeah, there really are. I think that's it's a kind of a coin flip of those 6 teams. Like maybe the Chiefs are a little bit ahead of Dallas, whatever, but they're all within that 13-17% range of winning the Super Bowl, which I've never seen from 6 teams at this point before. I honestly can't tell you who I think wins the Super Bowl anymore. I picked the Bills preseason. I don't feel great about that anymore. I had the Eagles going to the Super Bowl preseason. I don't know anymore. I mean, the 49ers are obviously a wagon right now, but I do have – look – Rookie's never done this before. Rookie third stringer has never done this before. It's hard for me to just wrap my head around. I don't know. It's a
no,
great
though,
field.
We
it's
can't get away from this. We haven't said it yet. We said it last week. It's just hard to get. And I realized Brady wasn't a rookie in 2001, but it just reminds you so much of it. Granted, that Patriot team didn't have anywhere near the skill talent. The Patriot team was all about their defense. And then they had worker bees. They had Antoine Smith. They had Troy Brown. You had Jermaine Wiggins. He had good play. Troy Brown was actually a really good player. Probably should have been the Super Bowl MVP or maybe Ty Law. Brady had fewer than 100 yards into that final drive in that Super Bowl. Somehow they give him MVP. I thought that was the wrong pick. But be that as it may. Purdy, the one guy who reminds me of is Brady. He's really cool. Nothing seems to faze him. He's surrounded by really good pieces. He's surrounded by the best defense in the league. I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying he's going to have Tom Brady's career. Who would ever be dumb enough to predict that? But I'll tell you what I will predict. I'll predict that Brock Purdy starts opening day next season.
Wow. Yep. I think not Tom Brady in San Francisco. No.
Brady's going to be a Raider. Come on. Brady already has,
I hate that Raiders fit. That's a different podcast for a different day. But who's that benefiting? Raiders? Brady? What?
Well, they've walked away from Carr. Was Jared Stidham the answer?
No. The reason I hate the 49ers is Kyle Shanahan fit, because I can't imagine, like, I mean, the Tom Brady 49ers fit. The reason I hate that is, like, I can't imagine Kyle Shanahan turning over the reins to Brady at all. I mean, give me a break.
That's
like,
he wants Brock Purdy.
I mean, just point shoot, kid.
Exactly. We're not getting any kind of improvisation here. All right, who's gonna run my offense? Brock, you do it. You're a robot. Go ahead. You're fine.
I'm just wish casting a good old fashioned 50-50 50-50 training camp battle here. Trey Lance, you got a 50-50 shot to win it. Brock Purdy, you got a 50-50 shot to win it. May the best man win. That's what I'm wish casting here for this team. But for now, that is going to do it for us. A banger of a podcast for one of, perhaps still, the best weekend of football. Make sure you can follow this whole crew on Twitter here. Frank, the classic company man, at Yahoo Schwab. Scott, my underscore bro, at Scott underscore Pienowski. And I'm at Matt Harmon underscore BYB. Don't recommend you follow me, but make sure you follow those other two guys. And of course, make sure you're following the real company, I mean the actual company, at Yahoo Fantasy as well. I'll be back on Monday with a recap of these games. Until then, we're out.